Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. Very much. Joining us, 34 after. My website is www.jbsba.com. And when you get there, don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes every week by email. Michael Cox, by the way, is our guest this half hour. Michael is an old friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's vice president and chief economist for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. He's the co-author of an outstanding book, which is a Pulitzer Prize-nominated book, Myths of Rich and Poor, We're Better Off Than We Think. He's our good friend. Michael, welcome back. Are you there? Are you there, Michael? We may have lost Michael just for a minute. Folks, this is live radio. You get what I get. It looks like we got disconnected. What Michael and I are going to talk about today, he'll be back in just a second, is China. China is something, you've been hearing me talk about China for a long time now. You've been hearing me talk about it because China is something that is a part of this world that we all need to know more about. We all need to be able to understand how China is affecting us. You know, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, you didn't need to know much about China. It was a dark continent, so to speak, and there wasn't much going on over there except a lot of communism. But all that's changed in the last few years. And one of the people who's interested in what's going on over there, and who's as interested as I am, and understands how China is affecting all of us, especially including small business owners, is Michael Cox. Michael, are you there?
I'm here, Jim.
Now we got you. Michael, I was just telling the audience about how things have changed in China over the last 10 years even. That 10 years ago, we didn't really, you know, China was just kind of a third-rate economy. It was almost a third-world country. Communism had ravaged it so much. But in the last 10 years, things have really changed over there, hasn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, China has a 4,000-year history. And up until the last quarter century, China really didn't make significant economic gains. The living standard of a 1975 Chinese person was basically the same as that as 1 AD.
Wow.
But they have improved their economy tremendously recently, turning it over more and more to free markets. Certainly not totally yet, or even close to it.
But it's encroaching, isn't it?
Oh, they're shooting up. China is an awakening giant. China's like that 1,000-pound gorilla that's going to be able to sit wherever it wants to, and right now they're sitting on some of the other non-industrialized kinds of countries, such as Mexico.
Well, now, you know, not to try to one-up you on the metaphors there, Michael, but my term that I use, the reason I like it is because it really dramatizes the effect China is and will have on the rest of the globe. I call it an economic tsunami.
Yes. Well, you know, okay, we're going to have one more analogy here for the benefit of people. Imagine you had a baseball team and every position had finally been filled by the best player, and everybody in the team was doing really well. Okay, the perfect person to be pitching was playing pitcher and first base and so on. And then three or four stellar athletes show up on the field, and they don't really have a position established. But there, you know that once you get them trained, they're going to play ball, and somebody else is going to have to sit the bench. Mm-hmm. That's the situation with China. It's going to change the whole team. Who produces what, where in the world? It changes world capital flows. They're lowering world inflation. They're already starting to roil consumer markets by demanding a lot more consumer goods. Mm-hmm. They're changing the nature of education and technology and immigration. So, I mean, I thought I'd tell you just a few statistics, for example, to get us going here. In 1978, China had the world's ninth largest economy. Their GDP was one-third that of Japan. Today, just a quarter century later, China has the world's second largest economy. Their GDP is 60% larger than Japan.
What is that number? Do you know?
China's GDP it's better to do it on a per person basis. It's about $4,800 per person. Ours is $37,000.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to say, because But the only reason I said that is in terms of a total impact to the globe, America's GDP is about $10.3 trillion.
That's right.
I was just curious about how that compares to China's.
Well, they're about $6 trillion.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, about $6 trillion. So
But you're right. We do need to think of it in terms of output per person.
Right. Their current growth rate is 8%, and that's down from double-digit growth rates in the 80s. Our current growth rate and our long-term trend growth rate right now is about 3%. So if China continues to grow at current rates, they will overtake the U.S. as the world's largest economy in 12 years.
12 years. Stand by, folks. We've got more to come with our good friend Michael Cox, co-author of Myths of Rich and Poor. He's also vice president and chief economist for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. But more important, he's our friend. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till on Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, Kelly Oldweiler is going to join us. We're going to talk about paradoxical thinking. Pat Weber will join us. We'll talk about salesmanship. And Don Cooper is going to talk to us about some really important stuff that he hasn't told me about yet. No, I'm serious. I'm teasing. We're going to talk about marketing when Don Cooper joins us. Michael Cox is our guest, and he's with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And by the way, folks, I want to encourage you to go to DallasFed.org and order their newest annual report, the 2002 annual report called The Fruits of Free Trade, which is an outstanding annual report. I've said it before. This is not your grandfather's Federal Reserve Bank website. This is not your grandfather's Federal Reserve Bank annual report. It's outstanding. I'm proud of my collection of annual reports that Michael Cox and his team puts out. And Michael, another great one this year. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, it's about trade. That's globalization and trade is what's really making things change right now.
It really is. I want to throw out a couple of ideas on China on how things have changed, Michael. I've been observing this. Two things, two different stories. One is textiles. You know how long textiles took to go from England to New England?
Yes.
It took a couple hundred years to get over there. It took another couple of hundred years to go from New England to the South. Mm-hmm. In the early part of the 20th century, they started migrating to the South. They were following the low wages. They followed the low wages to New England. They followed low wages to the South. And now, and by the way, folks, that was a single thing that gave rise to the national minimum wage, was that migration. And then 70 years later, or so, 60 to 70 years, those jobs migrated to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But only 10 years or less later, those jobs have left Mexico, many of them, and have gone now to China. That's one story. Let me tell you one other quick one. I visited with some people from five southern African countries. They make a local garment that the women love. It's a local design that's indigenous to the southern part of Africa. And the black women in Europe love to wear it because it ties them to their country, right, and to their part of the world, their roots. Well, what they don't know is many of them that they're buying in Europe are made in China.
China, its largest export to the rest of the world is textiles. And they export about $34 billion worth of textiles a year to the rest of the world. And if you look at what happened in that textile export market over the period, say, from 1978, well, let me first of all talk about why this is happening. There are four tiers of wages in the world. High wages like those found in the United States and Japan, Europe, and so on, which are about $16 an hour. And then wages in the $6 an hour range, which are other Asian countries like Singapore and Korea. Wages in the $2 range, such as Mexico, and then the fourth tier is China, 61 cents an hour.
Hmm.
Now, in 1978, China had 2.4% of the world textile market. Today they have 15.4%.
Hmm.
And at first they were crowding out Japan, and they did crowd out Japan, but more recently they're crowding out Mexico. In just the past 3 years, China has pushed out more exports to the rest of the world than they did in the previous two decades.
Mm-hmm.
and that's affecting their competition, their peer group of countries like Mexico. Mexico's exports did increase by about a tenth of what they did over that same time period. So China's big export push is now even affecting such countries as Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They're productive. They're not as productive. I mean, they're really not nearly as productive as say, United States in many areas. But the point is the wages are so low that even at those low productivity levels, it's still a bargain to shift some production in some cases.
Well, and the folks over there know how to work. They're industrious people. They're entrepreneurial. And what about the education level of China?
Well, China has significantly more education than they did, say, a quarter century ago. Mm-hmm. But still, compared to the United States, they're just not educated.
How do they compare to Mexico?
I don't know about Mexico, but I suspect it's higher than Mexico. Mm-hmm. In 1978, China had 9 students per 10,000 of the population in universities. Today, it's 56. So
right.
It's about 9 times as much as it was. But that's only a tenth of U.S. levels on a per 1,000 student basis. We have 541 students in universities per 10,000 of the population. They have 56.
Mm-hmm.
They're far behind on such things as education and technology. And that's the key to getting beyond the manufacturing age. China is about where America was in 1870 in terms of the mix of their industry. 50% of people work in farms.
Right.
About 23% work in the factories, and they have a small service sector. But it's not going to take them 120 years to catch up because
right.
of technology transfer. They can fully catch up fairly fast going into the manufacturing age and taking over a lot of world manufacturing, but to get from there on is much harder because you have to develop education and technology to be able to deliver human capital-oriented good services.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say that, and so they're shipping out a lot of students to the rest of the world
mm-hmm.
so they can get educated because China's educational system is very, very far behind.
One of the things I've been saying for a number of years, it's become evident to me that capitalism is the biggest enemy of communism in China, not democracy.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Yeah, capitalism and democracy have something to do with each other, but they can even be in conflict. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
Well, at a time when we couldn't export democracy, we couldn't shove democracy down China's throat because of the leadership over there. The we're coming in through the back door through capitalism, and that's what's going to create capitalism, end communism in China, and in one of the last big uglies over there in terms of political organizations that we need to do something about, the communist Chinese. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. Michael Cox is our guest. He's the author of Myths of Rich and Poor, co-author along with Richard Alm. And he is the Vice President and Chief Economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. That's DallasFed.org. Michael, when the politicians were selling NAFTA, the whole idea behind it was that, yeah, there would be jobs going down there, but those people would earn more money, and they'd buy our other stuff, and it would be a neutralizing effect. It'd be a nice little circle coming around, and it would be good for everybody. Well, that was. A good concept, except nobody took into consideration two things. Number one, whether Mexico could actually capitalize on their benefit, on their good fortune. And number two, we didn't talk about China. China, on the other hand, really is becoming a country that's raising its standard of living for its people, and it's becoming not only a producer of goods, but a consumer of goods, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, this whole thing needs to... Folks really need to think about this as being very positive, because you're better off if your neighbor's rich than if he's poor.
Mm-hmm.
There's more money to spend. And then rich people tend to produce a lot of stuff, and so that's stuff for the world to consume. That's how they get rich. And China is gaining wealth through, of course, pushing more out to the rest of the world. And in return for it, they're bringing in more from the rest of the world and through imports.
Their neighbors are benefiting from that.
And their neighbors are benefiting tremendously. Almost every nation that has a border or with China or is nearby, such as Russia, Malaysia, Korea, Thailand, Taiwan, Philippines, Singapore, Indonesia, having growing trade surpluses with China.
What about
the
Japan?
The only exception is Japan.
Yeah.
is just going sideways, whereas the combined trade surplus of these other nine nations has grown from $500 million to $25.5 billion over the past 10 years. If you look at, you know, what does China need? Well, they have 6 automobiles per 1,000 people there. We have 475. Mm-hmm. Right now, they've got a lot of bicycles. They've got 583 bicycles.
They don't have a lot of obesity over there either, do they?
They don't, no. If China were to raise its automobile ownership rate to just 1/5 that of U.S. levels, that would require producing 115 million vehicles for them.
Wow.
Just to get up to 1/5.
Think about that.
That's almost all the vehicles we have operating already in the United States.
Think about that.
So it's a growing consumer market,
there's no place for those jobs to go, really.
Right,
Michael. I mean, where are we going to go? We're going to send those jobs to the moon or something?
No, we get to produce those jobs, you know, and we will, because the folks out here listening need to think about China as an opportunity. I've talked to folks about this, even in such things as credit unions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start thinking about it, you know, there are many, many things, ways you can get into doing business with China.
Mm-hmm.
We're all going to have to face the music on this, because China is, they may be far away, but they're very large.
Michael, some of my Brain Trust members write outstanding books for small businesses. Your book is a Pulitzer Prize book. But it's not exactly a how-to book for small business, but they write those, and more of their books are being reprinted in Chinese. And I have one friend who's got 2 or 3 different Chinese languages: one Mandarin, one Cantonese, I think it is, and you know, different Chinese languages.
Mm-hmm.
They're buying our books over there. They're trying to understand about business.
Well, if you look at the Chinese that have come into America, if you go out to Chinatown in San Francisco, you look how industrious and saving-oriented and hardworking they are. It's just, you know, Chinese are hardworking.
They're hardworking. They're entrepreneurial. They want to learn. Those who aren't educated want to be. It's a very interesting thing that's happening over there. I think your point is an excellent one, that we don't need to think of them as a danger sign. We need to see them as opportunity. But that does take a long view perspective, doesn't it, Mike?
It does. But right now, just think how much help we could use getting somebody to sit on North Korea a little bit. But
right.
As China becomes more capitalistic, they become more like us, more our friends, more willing to tout the interests that we tout, and provide an effective force in that part of the world.
Which brings the peace dividend into play for this century, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know,
imagine the peace dividend of having China being a fully engaged trading partner for the world.
With the same interests we have. They're not really American interests. They're interests which America has embraced, because they're interests of capitalism, freedom.
Liberty.
Yeah. These aren't American ideas. They're ideas that America embraced, and to the extent other countries embrace those same ideas, we become friends.
They're ideas that humans gravitate toward wherever they live, no question about it. Michael, well done today. Outstanding discussion. Thank you so much for the information you provided us.
Thank you, Jim. Enjoyed it once again.
Yeah. Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen, DallasFed.org. Don't forget to order that annual report. I promise you, you'll thank me for it. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.